Yo, what up? Welcome to Fights with Friends.
How you doing, everybody?
What's
we
up?
We are here with our first official full episode.
Yeah, first guest. And it's a killer. It's a killer. We actually just finished the interview. It is a killer.
It is. And also just because it's such a great friend of ours.
Yeah.
So yeah. It was just a phenomenal interview and just kind of, we basically didn't even just got to catch up.
Yeah, totally. You want to know who we're talking about? Huh? We're talking about Becca GT. And we brought her on to talk about Poker Face. And I just so happen to have the script right here. Poker Face. This is an amazing fight. Becca doubles Natasha Leone. She's been doubling her since Orange is the New Black.
Orange is the Black, yep.
All through Russian Doll. And now on Poker Face.
Mm-hmm. I mean, this fight's great. I love it. It's brutal. It's brutal. It's two old women beating the shit out of each other.
Listen, before
the crap out of her, it is great.
Before you guys go further in the podcast, you should go to the show notes, click the link, and watch the fight.
It's a great fight.
Two former revolutionaries in a retirement home, right? One a paraplegic in a wheelchair, get into a massive fight with Natasha Leone's character. I mean, we're talking crazy stuff. Tasers
and over
drugs,
tables, over couches,
over wheelchairs,
needles in the net, you know, just yeah. Everything. It's an amazing fight
in a very small space, and it's a dirty fight, which is what I always like. The dirty fights, it's not a clean martial art type fight.
No,
this is a brutal fight.
This is people trying to survive.
Yes, and it's so awesome. So we're totally glad, and the show itself is just amazing. If you haven't watched Poker Face, it's on Peacock. It's a great, great, great show. Rian Johnson is the creator and writer of it. And if you guys don't know him, he's an amazing director. Look him up, but Oscar nominated. I mean, the nerds out there will know him from Star Wars Episode 8. Incredible. Oscar nominated? I don't know if he won an Oscar, but he was definitely nominated. Sure. Amazing show. You got to check it out. And the fact that we can get Becca on, sit with us for an hour, awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So, And again, one of the other great things about having someone like Becca on here is she has such a vast knowledge of so many different aspects of things that happen in the stunt world. Horseback riding, cars. I mean, it's all over the place. She's a pretty multifaceted and multi-talented person.
I mean, she started crashing cars in live shows like 20 years ago. And she's been in the business for a long, long time. Been in tons of amazing things. Obviously, everything that Natasha Leone's been in. 21 Bridges, she was driving on that show. Every single New York procedural show you can think of, she's been in. I worked with her on an episode of Law and Order that was insane. It was like a Ukrainian war scene. Mm-hmm. She played a mom that was getting her child stolen. I mean, it was actually her and Matt played the parents.
Yes.
Matt is
showing me that. That was awesome.
Yeah, Matt's Becca's actual real life husband. They also an amazing stunt performer. An amazing driver. He was the 1X on Blacklist for the entire run of the show. But anyway, the real life husband and wife played the TV husband and wife.
Ah, that's kind of cool.
It was pretty neat.
Maybe one day you and I will get to do that.
Husband and second wife. Yeah, man. The fuck? Why not? You heard that, casting agents.
Yeah, right? Oh, and speaking of camera cars.
Yeah, speaking of cars.
Camera cars.
Let's talk about our sponsors.
Throw a little shout out to our sponsors, Metro Camera Cars.
Yeah, Metro Camera Cars is awesome.
And Joe.
Joe Barry started this company. It's a great, if you need a camera car company, camera rig to shoot inside of your car, any of that, it's a great middle end service. They're based in New York, but they work national. They do a lot of commercials. And what I mean by middle end is he designed it to be a camera car company affordable to the sort of mid-range budget productions. So definitely check them out. He's a stunt guy too. He's trained here a bunch with us. I worked on a show with him and he was a DP on one of our short films. Mm-hmm. Amazing guy. And what's incredible is he went to film school, also became a stunt driver, and now he's running Metro Camera Cars. And so what's unique about Metro Camera Cars is you have a camera car company that's where the cars are piloted by actual stunt drivers. So it's a great meeting of the, I mean, they make an amazing service.
So how do you come about all of this information? Where do you, is there somewhere you go to get it all, or?
I just make it up.
Where do you figure it all out?
I follow Brett Copes's advice. Just freestyle, make it up. Brett Copes is one of our other sponsors from Fight or Flight Entertainment, which is a entertainment rigging company. They specialize in flying people.
And if you've ever had or have not ever had the pleasure of Brig rigging you and sending you flying, I yeah. suggest you seek that out, because there is nobody more gentle.
Well, you're in the air, it's gentle, at least. Not when you hit the ground, always. But Brett is awesome. He teaches incredible workshops around the country. So if you want a primer, if you've never done anything before, it's great to attend one of his workshops. And if you are an experienced rigger and you want someone's different perspective, it's also great. He's just a great dude, great company. All the information will be in the show notes. Yeah. Who else we got behind us?
Well, my favorite is Tactical Black, because, you know, if you ever want to learn how to run and gun on camera, I don't think there's anyone better. These guys will train you from safety offset, safety onset, and without a doubt how to look tactical while doing it.
Yeah, totally. And we've rented from him that, from them. They've taught here in New York. They've used our space right behind us here. They're great. All the sponsors of our show are people that we've actually worked directly with. And so we stand behind them 100%. Mm-hmm. Right. Who else we got?
Stunt Contact, right?
Stunt Contact. Yeah.
I mean, without them, what would we do?
Stunt Contact's a great service, man. It's like, if you want to know what's in development, what's in pre-production, what's in production, what's wrapping up, who's behind it, not just the stunt coordinators, but the producers, the locations, everything. It's all there on Stunt Contact. And what's cool is when you look up the, they do a weekly and a daily a service. So you can get daily emails about what dropped today on the listings, or you can get them weekly. Whichever you get, when you log in, you have an area to take notes. You can, like, so you don't forget, like, oh, did I contact these people? Mm-hmm. What were the responses? Did, you know, like, whatever. You can... Did I get radio silence like 98% of the people I said email? But they're awesome. The organization in their website is pretty freaking fantastic.
There's nothing worse than sending a resume to a coordinator and not really paying attention to what email it is you're sending it to. So you're like, oh, I'm sending an email to Norm. And then all of a sudden a show comes up and you're like, oh, I want to submit to this show. And then you send it. And then afterwards, you're talking to your buddy, and you're like, "Yeah, that's Norm."
Or and did I like, send it to
like,
this?
And then like, so did I just look like an asshole and send him two resumes to the same person, like he was two different people?
Yeah,
I was like, because now I look like a jackass.
That won't happen on Stunt Contact, because it'll tell you you already submitted to this one.
Yeah,
like, don't make that mistake. So, thank you to all our sponsors. You guys are fantastic. Without you, this show wouldn't happen.
Without a doubt, the show would not happen without them. So thank you so much.
But, you know, not all the production costs of this show came from sponsors. We also need supporters on our Patreon. So selfless plug, definitely check out our Patreon.
Please do. Please do. And again, one more. If you know of any local breweries out there that are willing to sponsor the show and would like to have their beer featured on the podcast, please let us know and we will gladly reach out to them.
We'll gladly drink their beer.
Absolutely.
Yes. Okay. Yes. So thanks a lot. And without further ado, watch the fight, the poker face fight, before we move on.
Oh, wait a second. What is this? You got a little thingy. We got something here today. What do you got?
Oh, this is a Russian doll, because Becca GT was on Russian doll. So we put a little homage to Russian doll on the table. It's not edible. Paul only likes things that are edible, so that, you know. And this, what we got this? What'd you bring in here?
Oh, okay. So I brought in some. I didn't have anything cool that was relatable like you did. So I just went and brought in something cool that was pretty stumpy. So this is Baseball Fury Funko, and it's signed by the late, great Jerry Hewitt. But the cool thing about this is this is the Blue Fury, which is the Fury that Bill played. And when he signed this, it was about 2 or 3 days after Bill died. So he wrote "Love You, Bill" on it. And then he signed it. So
for those who don't know,
Bill Agnos and Jerry Hewitt are legends, yes, legends, yeah, in the New York stunt community.
One of my very first hustles, like, was with Jerry Hewitt, and he was the nicest guy.
Yeah.
Like, so for people not aware of what a hustle is, right, in within not the kind of hustling Paul does, like, on late nights on the weekends, but, you know.
Totally different, and it's only on Tuesdays, guys. You can only catch me. You can only catch me in the meatpacking district.
But a stunt hustle is when you basically sneak your way on the set, introduce yourself to the coordinator, just say, hey, my name is so-and-so, and I'm looking for work. You know, we don't have agents generally, so we have to do it ourselves. And technology and times are changing, but hustling is still a thing, harder to do.
COVID made it hard for a while because you weren't allowed on set, but I feel like it's kind of,
yeah,
it's coming back around, being acceptable to just kind of visit on set. Make sure you know who you're going to see, though. Some people don't like to be bothered at work, because don't forget, they are working.
Yeah. And that's why Stunt Contact is so great, because you could just email them. But, you know, Jerry was coordinating Law and Order from day one, but Baseball Furies, he was one of the original Baseball Furies.
He was the one who was flipping the bat around. He was the green Baseball Fury.
Legendary. We'll put his IMDb in the show notes, too. You can see what a legend this guy is.
For sure. And again, Bill Agnos as well. Those two guys kind of were legends together in the New York stunt world. There's going to be movies and scenes and shootouts that we talk about that Jerry and Bill were both in.
Yeah, for sure.
Coming up in future episodes. So
anytime we talk about classics, a lot of the performers in the old classics are coordinators.
All great 90s New York films, The King of New York, State of Grace, all these great films. These guys were all in it.
Yeah, we want to do an episode on State of Grace, and we were looking up at who the stunt performers were, and we knew like half of them because they're just coordinators,
like,
now.
This is crazy. I was like, all these guys, I'm like, it's so weird because you never realize that you have a reason to nerd out. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden I'm like, oh, I got to talk to him about this, but I fucking can't because I don't want him to think I'm an asshole.
Yo, it's crazy. It's cool.
You know, I had that moment really quick when I was working on Iron Fist, and Brett Chan brought Simon Rhee over. Simon Rhee was on set, and I was standing next to him, and I was talking to him, and I was fucking nerding out about Best of the Best, and it's the reason I started martial arts. I'm sure he hears that all the time, because same thing with you.
For sure, yeah, I'm sure he hears it.
And then I just kind of went down a rabbit hole of nerdness and talked to him for a while, and then he walked away, and all of the stunt guys were glaring at me, and I'm like, what did I do? And then they come up, they're like, dude, do you have any idea? All we want to do is fucking do what you just did and nerd out with him, but we got to be professional. And I was like, oh, sorry.
That's the way Jerry was when I hustled him. It was one of my very first hustles. I was nervous, but you know, I showed up, I found him unloading pads from his truck. Actually, Noah was there too. I think it was me and Noah, and we both helped him carry pads onto set, and hung around, and he chatted us up until, you know, just chewed the fat, man, told old stories. He was just so fucking nice. Awesome. Jerry's awesome, dude. And without further ado, watch the fight in the show notes, and let's start our interview with Becca GT.
Cheers, buddy.
Cheers.
You go through. Look at that.
So we are here with Becca GT. Thank you, Becca, for joining us. We're super excited. You're our first actual in-person guest.
Oh, now I can see you guys. Perfect.
Oh, yay.
Paul, you're hiding behind my screen, Steve, but that's okay. It sounds like you're projecting your voice out of my head, so it's kind
of trippy.
Steve is in your head. So cool, man. How's your day, Becca?
You know, it the fun never ends, right? I feel like all I've done all morning is just put out fires, and we're trying to put the rally car back together. It's finally back from the shop and it's running, which is fantastic.
Sweet.
A lot of things that need to be buttoned up before it's ready to race again. So,
you know, that stuff's insane.
Yeah, just never ends. So, yeah, about 20 minutes ago, I was crawling around in the shop covered head to toe in dirt and scum and everything else. And I showered up and here I am.
You showered up for a podcast. Awesome. Where should we start? Let's start from the very beginning. So everybody knows we're talking about Poker Face episode 5, which was like insane.
Yeah, it was a really cool episode. You know, especially if you saw it, there's nothing better than watching old ladies get down and fucking dirty. I mean, it was great.
Yeah, Yeah, old broads dropping the F-bomb is always funny.
You got to say, for sure. So I guess before, maybe we'll go a little bit before the beginning, but how did you get into stunts and cars? And I mean, and you be outside of that, like basically have a farm, you have chickens. I mean, you live life.
Yes.
I mean, it's you know, it's pretty awesome.
Yeah, I mean, you know, pardon the pun, but to put it mildly, you kind of fall into the industry. I grew up riding horses and playing ice hockey in Rhode Island, kind of, you know, rough and tumble type of upbringing, bit of a tomboy. And then when I met my husband, he was a stunt performer for a traveling stunt show. And I knew nothing about cars at the time. And I was like, wow, that's really cool. I've never experienced anything, you know, anything of that nature. So I started doing some live show things, helping with safety, washing cars. We start at the very bottom and eventually worked my way up into performing some crashes and doing some other things in the live shows themselves. And then we just kind of started doing some stuff for TV and film in New England at the time. And it kind of just snowballed from there. And next thing you know, we were getting calls in New York, working a lot more in New York. That prompted us to move from Connecticut to, we now live in Pennsylvania, by way of Bay Ridge. We had an apartment there for a couple of years.
Brooklyn.
Yeah.
But and I'm a Queens guy, so fuck Brooklyn.
You know. Hey, the rest is history, kind of just evolved and still trying to, you know, every day figure out what the heck we can do to keep, you know, staying as viable as possible and keep working. And, you know, this industry keeps changing. It's fascinating. It's frustrating, but it's a hell of a lot of fun, man. It sure be papers around on a desk somewhere.
For sure. And so, like, what time frame are we talking about? Like, when did you first start working in the live show? This is at Chitwood's, right?
Yeah. So we had worked with the late Tim Chitwood. I'm trying to think dates. Probably, I'd say 2003, 2004. You know, it was a while ago. And then I think I actually started getting actual stunt jobs. Probably I'd have
to drive. Were they all driving your first stunt jobs?
Oh, no.
Was it
not at all? Actually the first couple, the first real job I had, was doubling in Boston for Corey Eubanks. And I was doubling the main gal. It was some wire work stuff that I was learning. And it was such a great, project to cut your teeth on because I was on it for about a month and a half. So I really got to learn from, you know, a huge, huge, great group and was like, you know, your actress is on set. You're there. Learned all about doubling. We had a lot of downtime, so I was able to ask a lot of questions of that crew. That was, really, really great, you know, experience to kind of get into the industry and learn the ins and outs and more about what happens behind the scenes and just the whole hierarchy of how things go. The majority of my jobs in the beginning were actually horses. So a lot of like riding things. I did a, you know, couple things for Court on Royal Pains at the time.
So for people listening, that's Court Hessler.
Yeah.
Court, longtime coordinator of Blacklist and many, many other shows.
Yeah. And, you know, then it just kind of started to evolve. We went out west to Rick Siemens. We were staying there with Tim at the time, and we were helping Danny kind of set up his BMW. This is Danny Downey. He was doing two-wheeling at the time, so Tim was there to kind of help prompt that and also help teach Lori how to drive on two wheels. We took the course from Rick at the time, and you know, just kind of networking. It's who you know and who they know. And you know, one person says one thing, another person says another, and next thing you know, you're kind of in this little core group and actually working and, you know, starting to do things that you just never dreamed you'd be getting paid to do. So, you know, we basically get to run with scissors and get paid for it. So it's pretty amazing.
It's very cool to get pay-to-play dress-up.
Yeah.
And action hero and all this kind of stuff. And like you said, it is a relationship business.
Yes.
You know, I think a lot of people listening may not understand that we don't have agents, we don't have managers, or some people do if they're also actors, but...
It's starting to become a thing for stunt people. I've heard more and more stunt people have talked to me about, like, oh, you should... And it doesn't sound like it's the same type of an agent that like an actor has. I don't know why, but yeah, it's starting to happen though. It seems like more and more stunt people are starting to get agents.
I've definitely heard it, but it's still, I think, majority word of mouth. What do you think, Becca?
I think too, with the way that the business has sort of changed, trying to save money every which way they can. If they can cast a stunt actor versus having an actor with a double, you know,
right. Two birds with one stone,
little small roles, then it makes sense. You know, a lot more stunt performers are finding that they can play a small role, and that opens up their ability to work more, because, you know, it's a pretty competitive industry as it is. And trying to juggle jobs and stay employed with all the other stuff going on all outside of the industry, never mind what's going on in the industry. Yeah, it definitely, I think everybody has to be as chameleon-like as possible and not have, you know, your skill sets for your stunt performance, but also be able to do other things such as...
Right.
You know, say a line or play a character.
I kind of have a bit of an idea. So I'm going to have Steve read something. And what I want you to do is just take a second and think about exactly what you was going through your head the first time you read it. And then when you realized that you were going to be a part of this.
Okay.
And just kind of just been like, wow, you know, this is where my brain went with this. So.
All right, here we go. Joyce swings again, but this time Charlie ducks and punches Joyce with a hammer. Joyce goes flying, bounces off the wall. Irene, on the ground, jams a knitting needle into Charlie's leg. Charlie screams a primal scream. The pot plants have erupted in flame. The dense cloud of pot smoke wafts up in the air. Irene crawls atop Charlie and chokes her out. Charlie struggles.
That's hardy.
I know, right? Hey, listen, you know, a lot of times you get a fight scene and it's like two lines that says they fight here. In this is the poker face screenplay and the fight is four pages long, right? And to the point where written into the screenplay, it literally says, if this fight seems like it's gone on too long, that's exactly how it should feel. Like it was written into the screenplay describing that, right? Charlie climbs to her feet and spins. Rocking Irene in the face with a kick. Wham! Irene rolls over in pain, looking like some kind of wailing ghost. That's when Charlie sees it, a taser. She runs over, grabs it. Wham! Joyce cracks her over the back with a shuffleboard stick. Charlie falls onto the ground, wind knocked out of her. The taser goes skittering across the room. Charlie rolls onto her back, just as Joyce kicks her across the room, picking up a lamp and smashing it on top of her head. That's just like half a page of this fight, right?
Three and a half left.
Yeah. I think, and to be fair, in the final edit, I think that's about what it got pared down to. it was scheduled to be so much bigger and have so many more beats that, you know, got pared down to shooting. And then also in the edit room, they tortured it even more. So it's even...
Yeah. So when you got this, I know you told me, like, I got this crazy fight that's coming up. What were you thinking?
So
I mean, now try to erase everything that you know.
Also, just we'll set the scene that this is two senior citizens.
Yes.
Yeah. One who's for everybody. We mentioned it in the intro. But if you have not watched, go to the show notes, click the link, and watch the fight.
One's in a wheelchair. Cannot move her legs.
Yeah. Can't move her legs. So to answer your question, Paul, what went through my head as I was reading the word on the page was, how in the hell am I to remember all of these beats? Both know fighting is not my big specialty. So my first initial gut reaction was, oh my God, how am I going to remember all these pieces, be in the right place at the right time for all of this stuff to happen, figuring they're going to do a master. And I had expressed my concern to Tom, who is the stunt coordinator. And
that's Tom Place for those listening.
And he assured me that the way that this was going to be set up, because they really wanted to get as much footage of the actual actresses as possible, it was going to be chopped up into a lot of different pieces. So that made me feel 1,000 times better. And then we could just focus on getting the previs to the director to figure out how this whole thing was going to take place in the space. For those who don't know, it was in like their assisted living room with couches and chairs and tables and, you know, very, very small space to work within to have this amount of stuff happening. So yeah, that was the first thing that went through my head.
So when you got together with Tom, what was the process building? We watched the previs. It's pretty funny unto itself, right? But how did that process happen? The creation of this fight based on what was written on the page.
We had Zach as kind of like helping fight choreograph some of the pieces, and Steve Izzy was doing the previs and the camera setups, and Tom kind of came up with the basic strokes of how we were going to approach this. And basically, we used the storyboards that Lucky had sent through the email, and, you know, kind of broad strokes of how this is supposed to happen. And the first thing, we had this really wild space to work in. It was like an old bank with these huge, huge ceilings. And they're like, okay, you know, you have this corner over here that you're going to work out this fight. So we weren't like in a gym. We didn't have like mats. We didn't have, you know, a whole bunch of stuff around. So it was literally like in a bank on a carpet in the corner. So
from what you did, shot on the previs in the gym, mm-hmm. right? And then when you showed up on set, Where was your mind being like, we have to make so many adjustments now? Like, was there a moment when you're just like, we can't do this the way we did it at the gym?
No, not really. Tom was pretty darn good of setting the space, even though we were using like boxes and mm-hmm. okay, here's this box over here that represents the couch, and here's, you know, kind of this, even though we didn't have the exact layout of what the set was going to be. We had the basic premise, and everything that we did in the previs, the way we moved through the space, actually pretty much, you know, aside from like, you know, little minor details here and there with set dressing and whatnot, pretty much mirrors what actually was shot on the day. So that was pretty great to know, like, okay, we've rehearsed all this, basically. We've done this, we've worked this out, and, you know, there are a couple little nuances and things that changed. One piece was Judith Light's character, and the two ladies, we'll get to that in a whole different world. They were so wonderful to work with. I hope to God when I'm that age, I have half that much piss and vinegar.
Can I pause for a minute? I want to read something.
Yeah.
This was from a Hollywood Reporter article about this very episode, interview, rather. And this is Judith Light. This is quoting Judith Light. When you think you can do something and what it means to be asked to do that kind of physical work, you have your team step in and say, no, you can't do that. You think you can fall off that bed, but we're going to have somebody else do that. Or they say, if you're going to do that, this is how we're going to do it. If we're going to place mats and foam down, and we're going to shoot things at different angles, particularly for women in our business, they don't always ask us to do that stuff. And then this is a follow-up. This is from an interview. McKee, Jake McKee, right? The director, he jumped in and said, Judith, honestly, she watched her stunt double get rigged up with wire, crawl up the side of the building, and she was like, I could have done that. She was so disappointed she didn't get to do it herself. She was just game for whatever we wanted her to do. The first portion with a lot of that close-ups, a lot of the close-ups and all that stuff, the early climbing, that's all her.
Yeah, she, they worked their asses off all day. As you can imagine, this fight scene took all day and it was nonstop. You know, you're just, okay, we're doing this piece and you get set to the next piece and the next piece. And they wanted to use so much coverage of the actual actresses. They were in just about every single chunk.
I mean, when I would see those swings and they were misses and I'm like, and I sit there and even though it was pulled away, I'm like, that doesn't look like someone doubling a 70-year-old woman. That looks like a 70-year-old woman throwing a punch.
Yeah.
Like, unless that double is amazing. Which could happen.
Yeah.
But I'm like, I feel like that those women were, they were throwing.
Yeah. Yeah. There were a lot of pieces there that they threw their punches. They reacted. They fell and all the struggling and everything on the ground. I mean, they were there for it. Judith's character, obviously she was in a wheelchair. She supposedly is paralyzed from the waist down. And that was probably one of the biggest things that we had to work with is this woman her legs. So when she's crawling across the floor to come after Charlie and when she's, you know, flipping things around and she's climbing up on things, like you just couldn't have her use her legs. So
and just a correction, the director's name is Lucky. I don't know why I said Jake.
Yeah, I heard,
sorry, Lucky.
It was like I didn't want to jump in. Yes, Lucky McKee.
But to your point, I read somewhere that they actually had a medical advisor to advise her on how people move when they are paraplegics like that.
Yes. Yep. And she supposedly, part of her character is, you know, she's got upper body strength, which is
you just picture that guy giving notes, been like, no, don't use your legs.
Which is kind of, you know, supposedly all this upper body strength because that's what she's concentrated on, which kind of leads to why she could climb up the side of the building to, I don't want to spoil anything, but, you know, to do what she had to do. So, yeah, that was definitely a bit of a challenge. But getting back to your question, Steve, about the setting up for the previs. So we had, you know, the boxes to create the space and we had a few props. I actually brought a wheelchair. So we could have, you know, we had our stunt doubles that we worked out the pieces. So they were actually working in a wheelchair to see, okay, if we flip this over, where's this going to end up in the space? How does that create a problem for us to get from point A to point B and then continue on to point C? So yeah, a lot of that thought process was taken into consideration, by Tom. And I really am, you know, very grateful to him for taking that time to really have that idea of how this whole thing was going to come together. Because on the day, it was so much easier because we had worked out all these problems.
Yeah, Tom is pretty amazing for those in the business who know him here on the East Coast. He's pretty awesome. I've worked with him before. Most of us have worked with him, either him performing or I first met him when he was performing, and then I worked for him as a coordinator once.
I don't think I've worked with Tom yet, but I know he's basically been in every single New York TV or film, anything that's been made since 2000 before. I don't know. I mean, but like, if you look at his IMDb, it's just like, oh, you've been in everything that's been everything.
Yeah. And his brother, Chris, too.
Yep.
And Chris Place is also awesome. And actually, it's funny you bring up the storyboards because we were talking earlier about how our job is to implement somebody else's vision, right? So, and the storyboards are so important. And as rank and file performers, not necessarily coordinators, we almost never see them.
Yeah.
Right? You'll show up and you're expected to do it. But one time in the last 10 years, I got storyboards sent to me with my call sheet, and that was on Equalizer, coordinated by Chris Place. And it was great to get the storyboard because I knew exactly what they were thinking was going to happen the next day.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. This was actually the first time I'd ever really, aside from like a random second unit, you know, where you see the storyboards with the cars and what they want to see and the pieces. This is the first time I'd actually worked with storyboards with people. So it was kind of neat. The, oh, okay, like they want this real close-up of like her crazy hitting you with a bedpan. And it just gave us a better idea of when we're putting this together, okay, where does all this need to take place? How, you know, how does this take place? How does this person get from here to here, tell the story, you know? And then on the day, like I said, a lot of it got cut or trimmed down, but it was still like what we shot that day was still insane, insane amount of things. And then, you know,
I mean, obviously, because what you had was great.
I mean, we watched it twice.
We just watched it before.
We just watched the fight again right before you got on, and we were just like cracking up.
And we watched the previous. So it was great to see the difference in the two.
Yeah. 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 You got to kind of see the evolution of what it was originally supposed to be and then what it ended up being.
Talk a little bit, if you can, about the camera operator. The camera operator is always the person that the viewer never sees, but they're always in there with you guys. And so tell us a little bit about how camera, maybe what they contributed to this fight.
So the biggest thing obviously was working out, because the only thing that was pretty tough for us going into this day was the fact that we didn't really have any rehearsal time with the actors. So we knew in our heads what we wanted to do. You know, Tom had this vision of, okay, this is what we shot in the previs. This is what everyone's excited about. And then, you know, we just didn't have a chance to work it through with the actors. So it was literally each piece we were showing them and then having them jump in and work it out and then shooting it. So there was a lot of dancing around. There was some talk, you know, the scene got changed because Natasha, who's also one of the executive producers on the show, just felt that, you know, this particular piece didn't make sense. So that got changed. So a lot of things kind of got changed on the fly. Working with the actors and trying to now piece together this fight and these beats and then explain to camera, okay, you know, now this is the space you've got to deal with. And we're all kind of on top of each other on this set. And, you know, it was kind of a dance to figure out what angles were going to work and what was going to sell. And, you know, now that they were in there, because obviously they don't have as much body awareness of their space. So yeah, that was a bit of a trick.
Actually, with the body awareness and the space part, normally when you shoot in a scene like that, there's a guy that would be behind the camera, kind of, that is his body and his eyes and his awareness. And he's giving him taps and signals on when to move and where to move sometimes. And just difficult scenes, just in case any of you guys are wondering how a camera guy can have his face inside of a camera and move around set. They'll usually have someone that they trust that's moving them around, that's making sure that they don't step on things and kind of guiding them around.
For sure. And then, and like you mentioned, Becca, there was no rehearsals really, right? And that's, I think that surprises a lot of people when they hear, especially in television, that it's go right to it. There's not a lot of rehearsal time, unlike film where you might have weeks and weeks and weeks of prep.
Awesome.
Right?
Yeah.
In TV, it's like, okay, we're going.
Yeah.
You better do it right now and get it right.
Ready or not, here we go. Yeah. So, I mean, in the camera, I want to say, God, it's crazy. It's only been a year, but it feels like, you know, forever ago. I want to say most of it was shot on Steadicam, just because it had to move in that space so much. I don't think there was much, you know, set on sticks or static camera positions. It was mostly Steadicam to move around with us and give that sense of chaos as things were unfolding.
That's so cool. And speaking of evolution, you officially, at least on IMDb, got a cover coordinator credit for this episode. But what I would really love to hear from you is sort of your evolution. Like, you're starting to coordinate more. You're putting on those shoes. Gilded Age, you're coordinating on, you know. And so talk about that change from performer to coordinator. And maybe even, you know, being on set and you want to do X, but you have a role that where you have to do Y, so you can't do X even if you want to, you know.
Obviously, the evolution of most stunt performers as you get older is to try to preserve your body as much as possible and continue to work in this industry that we love and make a living at it. So my years of training and teaching horseback riding, I was a very successful horse trainer. I had, you know, some national champions in my barn. We were this little tiny barn with the demographics around us that we just shouldn't have been, you know, at the level we were at doing what we were. But because we had some talent and because I take things to a whole nother level when it comes to obsessing over details, we were able to kind of hang with that higher echelon of riders and horses and kind of make a mark. So when it comes to organizing and kind of running the show from behind the scenes, that kind of comes naturally to me because I've done that for years and years and years in that industry. Fast forward to coming in here and covering, I mean, you know, with Tom, I basically was a body on set to just watch over what was already set up by him. Like, I didn't come up with, okay, we're this. Like, you're just, okay, he says, here's what's been worked out. Here's who is hired for the day. You know, just make sure everybody's safe. So it's more like babysitting versus actually, you know, seeing it from point A to point B the whole way through.
But that also just says a lot to who you are as a person that he would place that responsibility on top of you. Like, even though you're making it seem so mundane, it's extremely like detail oriented, and you have to make sure that everything is in place. So it's not as meh, you know. It's a really, really big deal.
Well, listen, even babysitting, if you do it wrong, you end up with a dead baby.
Well, but seriously, though, it's something like I done a move called Brave the Dark here in Pennsylvania, and that I was actually hired as the coordinator, lock, stock, and barrel, and had to come up with, you know, the budget and hire the doubles and set things up for, you know, the shooting. It was a lot of, again, I took all my organizational skills and everything that I've kind of learned throughout the years. Okay, this is how this works. But it is a lot to learn. Like, there's just this hierarchy within the production. And when you're in that position now where, you know, you're not just showing up to a location and being told, get into hair, makeup, wardrobe, and now we're going to take you to set. And now, you know, you're going to go and check in with your coordinator and you're going to do your job that you're there for. Now you're like on these email threads with hair and makeup and grips and, you know, we need to build this platform and we need to go on this scout and we need to, you know, work this out. And it's like, whoa, there's a lot more to it than just being there on set and making sure everyone's safe and making sure the action is what the director wants to see. So yeah, it's this real giant step. And, you know, I'm learning as much as I can. And I ask a lot of questions when I'm on set. Anytime I'm given the opportunity to cover, I'm super grateful because it gives me that opportunity to learn more. Every time you're on set, obviously, you can just learn so much and seeing like, okay, these are things that you need to be aware of. And oh, I might not have ever thought about that, but now it's in the back of your head. Now, as a performer, I think it enhances you as a performer when you understand the stuff that the coordinator has to do and juggle on a day-to-day basis. It makes you, you know, realize you don't text them at 8 in the morning and say, hey, I never got a call sheet, you know.
Wait, what? You can't do it? just kidding.
One thing that that we're also forgetting to mention, there is a place where everybody gets together and talks about this first, and that's called a logistics meeting. Not a lot of stunt performers know anything about a logistics meeting until you're a department head. So that kind of is something that's glossed over. I was lucky enough to be involved in logistics meetings since I started on sets, because I was doing content security and protection security, and then running a COVID department. So, but logistics meetings are a huge precursor for everybody to get on the same page, so that at least when you're all coming on set, you're all going through the same door.
Yeah, it's amazing, because it still never ceases to amaze me how in this industry, you know, we're talking about one fight scene on one TV show on, you know, one network. And this is like, we've talked for what, 34 minutes right now on one little piece. And when you look at the big picture and you see like these giant blockbusters that are being shot in these episodic TV shows and the streaming, I mean, it's just mind-boggling how much content is out there, how many different performers, how many different productions and you know, brains that have to come together to make this happen. And it's like, it's absolutely bananas, you know, how we're able to get anything done with all those different people, different opinions, different thought processes. Yeah, it's amazing how much stuff actually gets made on a day-to-day basis.
I mean, it's almost like if you were to, like, I'm a chef, so I look at it this way. This is how confusing it would be. Then, like, having an entire kitchen run by different food, but every item on the menu is run by a different food truck.
Yeah. Yeah.
But they all have to get their shit out at the same time and at the right time. And they all have to communicate, and everybody's got to work together.
Yep. And everyone's got to give great review in the dining room and say they love what they had. It's cooked perfectly and it's not hot.
Because if it goes back to the kitchen, if I'm going to fucking lose my shit.
It's always cooked perfectly when you're cooking, Paul. But so let's dial it back a little bit. So I don't know how long ago it was, but you first started doubling Natasha Lyonne on Orange is the New Black, correct?
Yeah.
Or did you work with her before that?
I wasn't her regular double on Orange, but I did a car crash where I doubled her. And then the main time when I started doubling her regularly was on Russian Doll.
Russian Doll. That's why we have this little Russian doll on the table right here.
Oh, cute.
Yeah. And that was, I mean, that we were joking, like that one show could be your complete stunt reel.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
you did a lot everything of stuff on that show.
I mean, it was pretty awesome.
It was crazy. So Chris Place had called me and he said, hey, I've got this show. He said, you know, but we're not getting any younger here. He's like, but it's very physical. And he just, you know, kind of named off some of the gags. And I was just like, wow, this is really cool. Because up until Russian Doll, the majority of stunts that I had done that were, you know, let's say epic or bigger than just regular, you know, fall down and whatever, was horse work and car work. So no one ever really looked at me as someone that was a physical person, like someone that could car hit or go down the stairs, because I just never had done it. So yeah, this was a really great opportunity for me to kind of wear that hat and do these physical, you know, these physical gags. And yeah, you laugh about the stunt reel, but literally that was every piece. And if you take that from season one and you put it together, it's like, wow, there's a whole like physical stunt reel for me that I just hadn't had the opportunity to do before. So yeah, that was a really great show to kind of get to do those things. And
when we went to the Television Academy screaming, we were screaming for you, but we went to the screening, you know, because Russian Doll had been nominated for some Emmys. It was the first time I've ever seen the stunt performer sitting up on the panel with everybody, you know,
yeah, they were so great about including me as, you know, the stunt double. Also hair and makeup had, you know, complete props. They were up there as well, because it takes a big team to make the magic happen. And yeah, just a whole different to how they gave credit to places where you just never really see that. You know, it's always the director and the DP and the actors, and everybody else is just kind of these unknown plebeians in the background. And they really kind of turned it on its head and gave a lot of credit to some of these other departments that, you know, busted their ass and helped make the show what it was. So yeah, that was really, really cool.
I mean, it really reflects the collaborative effort that goes into making something, and probably why that show was so damn good.
Right? Yeah, for sure. So I have a question. Now, you know, you being her 1X, has there ever been a time on set when a gag came up and then Natasha was like, I don't know if I want Becca doing that. I want her safe. Let's have somebody else do that. Has there ever been in this situation where you were actually like, kind of, someone was like, yeah, well, let's bring in someone else. Let's have, you know, have you ever basically as Natasha been like, no, I don't want her getting hurt on this. We're going to bring in someone else. Or has that ever happened? Has, you know, anything weird like that?
So Natasha will come to set and say, okay, Becca, that's you. So she's not worried about.
Yeah, right.
Of that nature. There was one particular stunt last year on Poker Fake where there was a car crash, and it was like kind of back and forth who was going to do it. And obviously that's kind of what I do. So I was in the mix to do it. And the producers are the ones that said, no, we can't risk our 1X on that particular gag. So because it wasn't doubling her.
I was going to say, it wasn't Natasha's character doing the car crash either, right?
You know, so that was a little like, it kind of sucked, because I, you know, anytime you get to wreck something is always a good thing. But I understood where they were coming from. And, you know, looking at it from the big picture, yeah, obviously that was halfway through the season. And if something stupid were to go wrong, out there, their double is, you know, out when it wasn't even supposed to happen. Doubling that particular character. So I get it. You know, at the time I was a little like, but you know, now I do, I get it.
For sure. So what do you got on the horizon now? I mean, you're gearing up for Rally Car again.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. Everybody should check out, follow her Rally Car Instagram. We'll put it in the show notes.
Every time I see an insane Rally Car video, I send it to Becca. And I'm like, and basically I send it to her being like, fucking insane. Literally these guys just like reading shit, and then he's like, oh, left, and he just like downshifts twice, takes a fucking hairpin left turn, and just, I'm like, what the fuck.
I will be honest, I've done some pretty amazing things in my stunt career. I've been allowed to do some pretty amazing things in my stunt career, crashing cars, falling off buildings on fire, literally, you know, just like insane things, but nothing has ever like curled my toes that like Rally does. I mean, it is the most physical, challenging thing I've ever done in my life. And it's not just, okay, you're doing this for an hour. It's you're doing this for like 3 days when you're actually racing, never mind all the stuff before and after and in between. It's just mind-boggling how
can you prep the course?
How
do you prep the course? Like, how does that work?
So you show up the day before, well, a couple days before, you get set up, and then you do what's called recce. You get generally one time you go at 25 miles an hour. You're not allowed to speed. You will get penalized. So everything's on electronic little, you know, GPS tracker, everything, so they can keep track of who's doing what. And you run it with your co-driver and you make notes. And that's the only time you get to see it. You know, one stage be 16 miles long. That's a lot of notes. It's every corner, every turn, every breaking point. You know, you're writing. And then you go on to the next stage, you do the same thing. You go on to the next stage, do the same thing.
You have a navigator with you? I mean, there's somebody else in the car with you, or it's just you?
No, there's a co-driver. You have a co-driver. So they make all the notes, and you might have, I don't know, 15, 16 stages. All of these stages are, you know, 6, 7, 18 miles long. So there's all these things, and then you have to transit on regular roads to get to the next stage. Some of these transits can be an hour long that you're running on public roads. You're on the highway and okay, we're going to go to this next place.
So all those cars have to be inspected so they could go on the public roads?
Yes. So it's,
that's crazy.
Yeah, dude, it's a lot. Like, and I just say, you know, you're racing for, all right, say a stage, 16 miles of racing. When you're in gravel and there's trees and rocks and cars that are broken.
And the roads are fucking thin.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And there's
like,
cars
crazy.
Over in front of you. You got to go around them and, you know, you're.
And do you, the spectators on the side of the road.
Yeah. And
they're crazy.
And your code.
Those people are fucking nuts.
Reading the notes and you're hoping to God that you wrote the correct notes and the rights are rights and the lefts are lefts. And, you know, you're flying through. You get to the end and your car's still intact. Now you're on a main road and you hear like all sorts of little bumps and things. And you're like, oh, God, I hope something's not falling off. And you drive to the next one. And
I'm getting nervous, not even driving. Just hearing you, I'm like.
I mean, I love it. It's absolutely.
You got the best shit eating grin on your face just right. Talking about it. Like, you know, you could tell that you're loving this.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And, you know, I will say too, it's helped me a lot in my stunt driving and just, you know, stunts in general, because after you've done something like that, where you're literally careening through the woods at, you know, 100 miles an hour and there's no rehearsals, there's no like safety meetings, there's nothing, like it is so raw and so organic and so tough that when you're on a set now, you're like, wow, there's so many more factors that are taken into consideration, so many more variables that you can control than when you're out on stage. So it's made me a lot more dialed in for just regular day-to-day stunts and say, okay, like there's so many more things that we can control here, where things that might have got you a little, not so much nervous, but just a little heightened, like, ooh, this might be, you know, a little hairy. And now you're just like, eh.
Have you ever been on set, like when they were shooting, you know, during action, and then you notice that for a safety reason, you have to make an adjustment because nobody else has noticed and you've kind of had to do it on the fly and then keep going and just,
oh, yeah,
stuff, you know, like
stuff happens, you know, bogeys jump out in front, you know, your brakes go, your steering locks up or something, like, yeah, weird stuff happens all the time and you just. You make your adjustment or you abort and you make it clear on the radio why, and you fix the problem and then reattack. So yeah, it's, you know, it's an evolution. I've always made it a point when I'm doing a car crash, I will tell the coordinator specifically, like off to the side, I'll say, okay, when we're ready, cause you know, you do your lead ups and the cameras are like set and this and that. And, I said, when it's time to go, like for real, like we're hitting this thing. I want you to say on the radio, we're doing it for real. So then that way there's no question. Oh, I thought we were doing a lead up, or oh, the camera wasn't set right. Or oh, I just thought you were doing a speed run. It's like, no, this is for real. This is happening. So that way it's on the radio. I hear it. Everybody else hears it. And yeah, that's like one of my requests when I go to do a car crash. Like, please tell me it's for real and we'll get it.
Well, we have, I mean, we're not going to bring up anybody's names, but I remember hearing a story of a bad driver not knowing the difference between a lead up and an action and missing his mark on every drive up. And they basically were like, no.
Yeah, we've heard, I mean,
no more with you. And he was basically offset the next day.
Yeah. I mean, we've all heard bad stories about many performers. I mean, that's part of the business, right? It goes back to the relationship, word of mouth aspect of the business.
And also, you know, a lot of people say, I remember, you know, when I first got into the business, everyone was like, you're only as good as your last job. And I turned to Steve the second I heard that, and I was like, that makes no sense. I was like, you're only as bad as your last fuck up. I'm like, that's what everybody remembers in this business. Nobody remembers you doing your fucking job.
Exactly. That you took the words out of my mouth. Nobody will remember all the things that you did great. They will remember the one time you screwed up.
Mm-hmm. And they'll remember it for a long ass time, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
I actually have a funny moment of where I actually thought.
You had a broken leg?
No, of where I literally thought I watched someone's career end on set. And they were doing a slapping scene, and he was in full mount. The actress was on the ground, and they were shooting from behind him on the ground. So the slap had to come very, very low and then up and high across the face in order for it to sell. And the stunt coordinator's right behind the camera, and, you know, he's going again, and she's struggling, and she's going whatever, and everyone has this blocked angle of this slap happening, and then all of a sudden, he goes again, and we just hear, and the coordinator covered his face and put his hand down. Everyone went, and then what the funniest thing was that the actor and the stunt guy both turned around when they called cut, and everyone was like, oh my God, and they're like, what? And they're like, dude, did he just slap? Did he hit you? And you're like, no. What happened was, is as she was moving her hands, she moved her hand in front of her face and he hit it.
Yeah.
And no one saw it. And everyone thought he smacked her in the face. And literally there were four stunt guys and we all just thought we watched a guy's career end. And then we were so happy that he was just like, oh my God.
Yeah. But if we get hit in the face, it's all good.
Oh, it's all good.
Well, to be fair, too, I mean, it probably wouldn't have ended his career.
Well, you know.
As part of being...
In your mind, that's what you're saying. You're like, oh my God, I just watched someone's career end.
It's a matter of you are going to screw up at some point. It's just a matter of when. And sometimes, like, we're super critical, right? So something I do, I might say, wow, like, that really sucked in my own head. But someone else is like, oh my God. So it's like, you know, we are our own worst critics.
Isn't that the worst, though, when you're on set and you just did a take and you thought it sucked and they're like, that was awesome. All right, let's move on. And you're like, no. Can I do one more, please?
I remember my first thing ever, I was on Blacklist and I had to break a window. Okay. Oh, by the way, the first time I ever had to break a window on set, I was assuming it was going to be like nice and easy. And I actually had to break like an inch thick plate glass. So I go up to like break the window and I was like, and they're like, cut. And I was like, fuck. So I go to do it again. And I was like, okay. And I hit it really fucking. I was like, and it was like, what the fuck? And I had to hit that thing as hard as I could to break the window. And then as I go through, I point the gun at the guy and I turn to walk away. And when I turn, there was a bunch of electrical boxes behind the couch. So when I had to walk, it was either I take big steps, right, behind the couch as I walk away after killing this guy, and I'm supposed to be all tactical about it, or I widen my legs a little bit and just walk over everything. So I do, but if you notice what I was doing, you can totally see me waddle. Like, even in the scene, like, when you watch it, go back and watch the scene in Black, like, you could just see me waddle over these things, and I'm like, and they were like, nope, done. And I was like, no,
I'll let you in on a secret. Nobody has gone back and watched that scene but you.
And he's probably watched it 1,000 times.
Yeah. Oh my God. I'm just like, I look like I'm walking to run and just drop a deuce.
Yeah, we are definitely our own worst enemies when it comes to evaluating our performance. That's for sure.
So speaking of evaluation, if people want to see you, follow you online, like, where can they go?
I have a Facebook page that's just my name, Becca GT, and that is my legal last name, by the way. A lot of people ask me that. It is officially been my last name for the last 14 years. I also have an Instagram under Becca GT, and then the rally page is GT Action. GT Action Rally Team. Sorry, I was like, wait a minute, what is that?
If you get your own social media wrong, we'll put it in the show notes just in case.
Yeah. But yeah.
So what do you got coming up? Anything you're looking forward to in the future?
Well, there's always things to look forward to in the future. This eclipse on Monday is going to be a hoot. So, and after the earthquake yesterday, I don't know, I guess maybe I'm looking at the rapture, but.
Well, you'll be able to ride the one of the, you just take down one of the horsemen and you can ride away. You know.
I'm excited because there's like a bee season, right? Which means there's going to be some GT honey around.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. For those watching or listening, Becca and her husband are beekeepers and they make.
I tried to make mead out of it and it came out like fermented griffin piss. It was fucking disgusting.
Where the hell did you ever drink griffin piss? Did you work on Dungeons & Dragons?
No, but you do weird stuff when you're LARPing and you're younger.
So, yeah, we're looking forward to your honey.
Good. Yeah. Sure. Yes, we actually have to re-hive everything. The bees did not make the winter. Winters are really, really hard around here to keep the bees over. But we get a few nukes in the spring when it warms up. And hopefully they take and we'll have another harvest at the end of the season. But yeah, so far just day playing on a couple different shows. And Poker Face Season 2 is slated to start filming again in July.
Awesome.
A little heads up from Tom what the first episode going to entail, and I will not give any information except I will say it is something completely different outside my wheelhouse, and it should be pretty exciting. But yeah, so we're going to be New York, as far as I know, I think Brooklyn, not upstate this time. So it'll be a lot of commuting in my future.
Maybe you'll come by and work out with us one of these days.
Yes, yes. It's been a minute. I definitely do.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show. It was awesome.
This hour flew by.
Yeah, totally. That was a fast hour.
We only talked about like one fight. That's crazy.
And bees. And bees.
And bees. And bees. And cars.
Yeah, no, for sure. Very cool, guys.
Yeah, you're awesome. And this will be the first show, so I think we'll launch Season 1 with a great episode.
Awesome. Absolutely. Thank you guys so much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Awesome. Becca, you're the best.
All right. Take care.
Give Matt our best.
All right.
Yes.
We'll do.
Fights with Friends is brought to you by Breakfall Studios and Press Record Studios. Executive producers Stephen Kepfer, Paul Verace, and Tiago Benedetti. Produced by Richard Butler. Associate producers Becca GT and Jared DeCrosse. Our video editor is Matthew Kaplowitz. Original music by Aru Luster.